So Michael suggested that I first check whether you want me to go relatively quickly to the introduction and then we open the floor for discussion, or we go to every point and discuss as we go along. What do you prefer? Any? Nobody care?
I'll put a slide, first slide, we'll see
how. Okay, then we'll keep it open. So this is the introduction to the assembly of viruses, but then for the specific case of the how a virus can be directed by RNA molecules to assemble. So RNA is a kind of template for the assembly. So my plan is to first talk to you about one case which is reasonably well understood, and then two cases, and then two models which have been proposed in with various degree of relevance for it. So the one experimental case which is understood for RNA-directed assembly is actually one of the oldest. It's the tobacco mosaic virus, which is a virus composed of a single RNA molecule with about 6K bases and 2,000 identical copies. And you can see the, well, maybe I should stand. The structure is that of a spiral. Every protein sees the same identical environment. The RNA molecule is wound on the inside in a groove which runs along the axis.
Who got the Nobel Prize for this one?
Well, this was done by Rosalind Franklin, but I don't think she got no Nobel Prize for anything, neither for DNA nor for this.
Yes.
I guess so. I believe that the history was very involved and complicated. The discovery that this virus assembles spontaneously was in the same period that Rosalind Franklin determined the structure, that was done by Frankel, Conrad, and Williams, who showed that if you take a solution of 0.1 molar salt and pH 7, and then you just add the capsid proteins and add the RNA molecules, then they will just magically appear in the solution. And they can infect the plant, so they really are there. You can redo assemblies, maybe the first case of controlled macromolecular assembly.
Any RNA are very specific?
I think that that effective assembly of TMV RNA requires some RNA segments. We'll talk about it in a second. Oops. Aaron Klug, who did get the Nobel Prize, is the one who made this whole thing famous. And what he first did is he took the TMV proteins without any RNA, and he made what maybe you can call a sort of a phase diagram. The horizontal axis is pH. This is high acidity, low acidity, and that is salt. So this is physiological condition. When he used very deep and looked on the electron microscope, and this is what he saw. That is, at high pH, you get small oligomers. At pH 7, you get a disc, a double disc. And at low pH, high acidity, you get the same sort of helix which you see in the for the virus, except it's, of course, empty because there's no RNA here. You increase the salinity, you get a lock washer, which actually is the key basic component, not the disc. And then if you increase the salinity even more, you start to get aggregates, either ordered disks or disordered disks stacked on top of each other, a little bit like what we saw this morning. So this is sort of the assembly phase diagram. The key point is that under physiological condition, you, of course, don't assemble the helix because it wouldn't make any sense. You want to have the virus to carry the genome, so you have this component. And then let's make a brief look at the type of interactions. These proteins composing the TMV RNA, they have three sorts of interactions. What holds them together is the hydrophobic attraction, which is relatively independent of both salt and acidity, and that was shown long ago by Bancroft. The second interaction competes with this, and that's electrostatic repulsion. They have both positive and negative charges, but they do repel each other. And if you increase the salinity, you weaken the repulsion. There is some pH dependence in the electrostatic repulsion. And the important role is that the electrostatic repulsion prevents the premature assembly. They are carefully balanced under neutral pH and 0.1 molar, so you're just sitting on the borderline. And this is then again the lock washer. You see here this line of positive charges. That's where the RNA will later lie. So there is a kind of bet here for the RNA molecule. So you know already that electrostatics is going to play an important role for RNA-directed assembly.
No tails.
I think these have loops on the outside and tails on the inside, but it binds to an alpha helix. There are some tails here, and I think part of the RNA runs through the center, but I don't know the answer to your question. The third important interaction that's pure chemistry, is called the Casper pair. Casper is one of the great people in viral assembly. And that's pH dependence. And it's believed that all this pH dependence is not so much the electrostatic repulsion, but these Casper pairs. And I'm not a chemist, and I'll just show you the picture. Imagine you have two amino acids in these kind of carboxyl type groups, carbon with two oxygens. If you protonate it, if you put it in a high acidity environment, then this proton can be shared between these two oxygens and form a bond. So the idea will be that we have this sort of double oxygens on neighboring on neighboring proteins, and that you put a proton in between and thereby put it together. And you can make a reasonable model for these discs where you take these three interactions into account. It was done by Paul van der Schoot and Willem Kegel, and you nicely get helices, discs, and monomers. And the thing to keep in mind here is that under neutral pH and 0.1 molar, you're sitting right here in this point where these three interactions are kind of a frustrated point where all of these structures are potentially there. So nature is poised for assembly. So before you ascend in the RNA, it is kind of hovering to assemble itself, but it waits for RNA to be the signal. So that's the protein-protein interaction. The protein-RNA interaction has two components. One is electrostatics. I already mentioned to you these positive charges, and the RNA goes in. It's spiraling around here. Here you see the Casper pairs in red. So you see it's kind of nailed. Basically, it's nailed together like these nails you put on board. You just nail the whole thing together with Casper pairs. So this is the RNA molecule, and like typical single-stranded RNA molecule, you have stem loops, you have bubbles, and you have branch points. Now, there was a question, what was specific and what was not specific. A typical viral RNA has some specific groups. This happens to be a specific hairpin. And they're called packaging signals. That doesn't mean that you cannot package other sorts of RNA, but it's just much harder. And it's believed that this packaging signal mostly talks to the assembly kinetics. The kinetics goes much faster if these loops are present. If you cut them off, it goes much slower. So it's not for the overall thermodynamic stability, but it is for the initiation of the assembly.
So is that a nucleation point you're saying?
Sorry?
Is it a nucleation of assembly? Or
yes, the packaging signal is the one which seems to govern the rate for nucleation.
I don't understand how this RNA will make a spiral.
We'll talk about it in the next picture.
We talked about
pseudonauts
a few days ago.
About what?
Pseudonauts.
Pseudonauts, yes.
So,
Well, there is one of the big unsolved questions is what happens with the secondary structure of an RNA molecule once you go into a virus. So pseudonauts are relevant. Many viruses have, for many viruses, the key packaging signal is a sort of tRNA-like structure, which is a pseudonaut at the end, and that initiates the assembly. It's just a factoid, which I know. If you cut it off, then it goes much slower. So the pseudonaut is important.
Are you talking about loop or pseudonaut?
This is a loop, which is important for the signal. I gave another factoid, which is in many small RNA proteins, at the end you have a tRNA-like structure which has a pseudonaut, which, for instance, for small spherical viruses, seems to initiate the assembly. You can cut it off, and it goes slower. And sometimes you can just have to add it to the solution, and it will assemble, and you can wash it out, and it's perfectly stable. So it seems to talk to the kinetics.
How strong are these Casper pairs?
I would assume that because each Casper pair is going to be in the range of KT, because if you change pH around KT, you go from open to close. So simple arguments would tell you that. but it's there so many of them, right? Because you have hundreds of proteins. So every if you close the Casper pairs, you suddenly get hundreds of KT available for the whole shell.
Only between oxygens?
I'm a physicist, Isaac. Yes, my understanding is that this is how the Casper pairs work. Let's try to address the question of Boris. How does this work? This is a cartoon from Aaron Klug, who is a very dominating man, and we still draw the same cartoon. Whether this is true, I mean, you don't see this. The first bit, you definitely see in electron microscopy. This is, I think, very generally believed for all sorts of reasons, but we cannot see it in electron microscopy. Here's the belief. The packaging signal is recognized by a disk. So the packaging signal, this loop, fits into the disk in here, and that somehow alters the electrostatics of the disk. Remember, there's this positively charged groove, and transforms the disk to a lock washer. In the process, the RNA here with the secondary loop gets altered, and the top of the RNA starts to wind into the groove, and here are the remaining bits sticking out. And then you iterate the process. The next disk comes up, you thread it through, and you keep spiraling it further in. So
it is winding as a single-stranded RNA?
Or? Yes, because the groove has only single-stranded RNA. So in the model of Klug, there's a single-strand RNA in this spiral, and the end comes through the hole out. And as you grow up, I assume you're simply threading this remaining strand in, like you're hauling in a fish.
Does this mean that pairing is gone?
Okay, so in the model of Klug, all secondary RNA structure is destroyed by the virus assembly. And it's very hard to imagine anything else, because in the X-ray structure we can see, I showed you the X-ray structure before, the RNA is completely bound. So apparently the whole secondary structure is destroyed during the assembly. And we know nothing really about the secondary structure of the RNA inside the virus, and except in a few cases we know that it has been drastically rearranged. Sometimes you'd see double pairing.
I start from your nucleation hook,
Do
the two lengths of the two strands significantly different?
Good question. I asked it myself because I was wondering if you pull this through in this model, is it asymmetric or symmetric? Because it's obviously the two loops are treated here in an asymmetric way, so I would expect it to have this packaging signal at one of the two ends, not in the middle.
Well, but if you look at your picture,
let's look at it.
Yeah, here you start from this hook and just count number of monomers on the two strands. You're probably going to get a significantly different one. And it's the one that's longer. Is the one that's spiraling. Just enough to account for the...
My idea was that the longer one is being drawn in and eventually becomes the shorter one. So, okay, let's look at the picture again. You pull this thing in, and as it grows, every time you add one more disk, you haul in this thing and you add one more turn. So I assume that this is initially the longer length. This stays the same, and eventually it's just all eaten up as it goes. But Klug is not particularly precise there.
So you're saying that your picture is RNA is rearranging as you add, rather than just starting from the point and the disk are ending up.
Yeah, my picture says it's being hauled in. Every time a disk goes in, you haul in a bit more RNA, you wind it in.
So RNA slides up.
Yes. Can friction, you assume that you cannot pull in, you don't want to slide all of this RNA through this groove where it bounds. That doesn't make sense to me. My guess is that once it is bound inside a disk, it stays there. I don't think you can slide it. But there is no good model for it. So,
are there experiments with artificial RNA?
Artificial RNA?
Yeah, if you do RNA with this initial signal in different places,
good question. I don't know about those. There are experiments on with artificial RNA on spherical virus. I'm not aware about the
TMB.
I know that polyelectrolytes can be encapsulated in spherical virus. I never heard of for TMV.
But the ratio of the two lengths corresponds to the ratio of a spiral pitch to the
the ratio
of the two lengths of the two strands from the
if you unwind it, if you destroy the secondary structure, what's the problem?
I think you say that the slope has to be preserved.
The slope?
The loop.
I was imagining that the first loop goes into the first groove and then you haul in the remaining part up through it. So no, I wasn't imagining that the loop gets preserved. I'm imagining that the loop goes in, folds in the goes into the first groove, and you haul one of the two strands for the next groove, and then you keep on hauling that strand in as the thing goes up.
So as you go along the RNA, you're going from a more negative to a more positive section. And so how
as you go in,
I see. Okay.
What is more negative and what is more positive section?
I see.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Shall we go on? Good. All right. So here the summary of RNA directed assembly. This is the one case where we have a reasonable model, and you see already how many questions there are. Under physiological conditions, you get oligomers, no assembly of empty capsid. If you add the single-stranded RNA, it does three things. First, it alters the sign of the protein-protein interaction between the disks. They become attractive, and that obviously is by charge neutralization. The second one is through this it initiates assembly, and the third one is it determines the size of the virus, because you continue this process up until you have exhausted the RNA. So what people have done is cut the RNA and seen that you can adjust the size of the of the virus. So you can tailor RNA TMV to whatever size you like, and I think people like Seth Fraden use that.
And they cut DNA from which side of this
initiation? DNA? RNA.
RNA from which side
of the packaging signal? My guess is that you want to preserve the packaging signal. But all of these questions are very good, and I don't know. I don't even know the location of the packaging signal with respect to the two ends. I just don't know the answer.
So in your sliding model, do you disassemble the...
It's not my model. What?
Well, in the model you're describing where the center slides up and, and spirals, do you disassemble the secondary structure of the back rack?
Yes.
Before even this could get there, there's still a plume of the stub in the middle.
Say again, there is not a...
You're adding for first, second, third disk.
Yeah.
There is still a plume of RNA.
Yeah, but you have to keep destroying as you pull it in.
So when you pull, it's like forced into the structure because the charges are not... The tail doesn't know you're adding something on the other side.
Well, I mean, that's the usual with entropic forces. I mean, it fluctuates, right? There's some tension. I assume that you haul it in on the top, you gain electrostatic energy, you place it under tension, then you open up the secondary structure a little bit more.
Yeah. That's what my question. So the tension is melting.
But there is no good... It's a beautiful physics problem, and I haven't seen any... the only person working on it is Paul van der Schoot, as far as I know. Everybody seems to love spherical viruses because that's what makes us ill. And so the question is now spherical viruses. This is much more difficult, and we don't have anything like a even halfway satisfactory description. So this is a Flockhaus virus. It's a small virus. It's T equals 3. It's 100 angstrom. And this is one of the few cases when you really can see with X-ray diffraction where the RNA is. The red exterior is the capsid. It's 180 identical bases. And the genome is two single-stranded RNA molecules with about 4,500 bases. And you see it is relatively well ordered with respect to the icosahedral structure. So the RNA molecules, so there's a couple of them, but here's how it looks under electron microscopy, sort of like a branched polymer, but this is not quite a full branching. I don't know if these are single or double strand. This is what you simply see. It's about 13 nanometers in size, a bit bigger. So the branched polymer end-to-end distance is a bit bigger than that of the virus. You need compaction. If you stretch it end-to-end, you get something like 100 or 150 nanometers. So this thing, this dense object, has to be compactified to go into the shell. So one interesting question is whether the branching pattern of an RNA molecule which goes into a virus is different from that of random RNA or maybe mRNA. And
the solution, you probably don't expect it to be that stretched. You just take a
of course not, no. So here, that's what I just said, Michael. So in solution, it's about 30 nanometers. If you stretch it out, it's about
so the solution is the same size as
a bit bigger, yeah.
But also, if you have pseudo nodes, it determines most of the 3D structure.
I'm sure it does. So it will, it's certainly much more compactified. And electron microscopy might destroy the pseudo nodes. So it might be even denser than 30 nanometers, for all I know. I do not know.
Why don't you solve this? Why don't you show pictures of pseudonuts? Three pictures.
You like pseudonuts?
No, I just heard. I mean, I'm sitting with the Henri in the same room, so I hear a lot about pseudonuts. Why? They are not right? They are not.
I am sure it's important, but. I would say that anything which makes a structure more compact will help the assembly. Nevertheless, there's no question that the density of the RNA inside a virus is significantly bigger than outside. So there you see already a sort of a problem. The RNA has to help the assembly, but it's just looking at it, you have the idea that it also applies an a pressure on the shell. We know for DNA viruses that they exert a very large pressure of about 30 atmosphere. For RNA, since they help assembly, you would guess it's a negative pressure, not a positive pressure. But it's just not known whether they exert a pressure at all. So the genome seems to be more compact than a randomly branched genome that's established by Bill Gelbart and his group. Let's continue.
By pressure, you mean electrostatic, osmotic?
So it's the tension in this wall. Whatever
in the green stuff.
No, in the red stuff. Does the green stuff create an osmotic pressure which tenses the red stuff? Just not known.
But if it doesn't self-assemble without RNA, that means it's a negative pressure.
That's what you would say, right? On the other hand, the RNA has to come out. So you would guess it's a negative pressure because it has. But you can also imagine that even though the pressure that the pressure could become positive because the interior part of the RNA is not in contact with the proteins, so they're presumably not particularly happy. So how this all gets compactified isn't clear. This is all electrostatically repulsive. Maybe we are overestimating the electrostatic repulsion. Why doesn't it? How does it get compactified so much?
So for the TMV, we had three bases per protein.
I guess so, yeah.
In here we have 25 bases per protein. Is there
yes.
a rule that tells you there is a number where
That's...
you have rods?
Or... you hit on a key point. So for TMV RNA, they're proportional to each other. Here you have an excess number of proteins. So excess number of RNA. It's a surface to volume problem. The RNA is in contact with the proteins to the surface, but it fills most of the volume. So why would they want to go in? You can imagine attractive interactions, but these attractive interactions are only going to cover the surface of the genome.
But if you just assume that you have a charge polymer absorbing on a surface,
yeah.
It would cover the surface and plus to build a fluffy carpet around.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that would.
But
then you can come at the same time.
Well, then the question is, why don't you end up? Why don't you end up with a thing like that with a tail hanging around, hanging on the outside?
You have extra stuff.
Well, hold on. Let's just. So this is the one assembly diagram, which is similar to the one of Klug. Here is again pH, the ionic solution. This is CCMV. Again, at neutral pH and 0.1 molar salt, you see dimers on the. If you have high concentration, you might see sheets and tubes. If you lower the pH, then you can get T equals 3, the proper empty capsid. If you go to low salt, then you see multi-shells, concentric shells.
No RNA?
There's no RNA. So this is the analog of the Klug phase diagram for the proteins by themselves.
Low salt, it's from cells because the inside is positive and outside is negative?
Absolutely. Good. Well done. Yeah. So the inside, the RNA is negatively charged, so it's in contact with positive charges on the surface, and the negative charges are on the outside. I should have mentioned that. So this is dipolar. So the observation of these concentric shells is prima facie evidence that they are dipolar proteins.
How does the symmetry of the shells mesh to be concentric? Do you have like T1 is actually clear set of the five?
That's sort of believed that this inner one is T equals 1. It so happens that CCMV can form a variety of shells, T equals 1, T equals 2, even though that's not an icosahedral structure, and T equals 3. But this is just done with sedimentation, so you don't know what the structure is.
And the width is just enough to have the statics work?
To have the?
Well, if the statics matched, so the distance between shells is...
That's right. So you should check with Chuck Nobler, who has done exactly that sort of experiments, so whether the sizes of these shells match. Now let's put in the RNA. I am going to try to make a toy model for that, or rather not me, but Slotnik, who was here last week. This is called the Slotnik toy virus. So we're going to try to assemble not even a T equals 3, but a T equals 1 virus from pentamers. So we have 12 pentamers. So we have a chain where we put these pentamers together, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the backside. The front side is green. The backside is red. The backside is purple. So you see that you get assembly of a dodecahedron. Everything is kept here reversible except the last step, which is irreversible. So that's a little toy model with a fixed total number of pentamers in solution. It's very similar to a living polymer, which most of you probably are familiar with. So this is actually a mathematically soluble problem. You can write down a master equation. C is the concentration in solution of n-mers at time t, which is sort of like the divergence of a current. This is the assembly current going from the left to the right. So it's a difference between these two currents. That's the rate of change of the concentration of the n-mer. So you imagine that you have monomers, dimers, trimers, up until the fully assembled dodecahedron. Sorry, you can't
see. This class should also give you the reversible, right?
What? Yes.
The notation from the point of view.
Okay. So you get assembly from here to here. So Jn plus 1, Jn is the current which goes from n to n plus 1. So this is the difference. This is the incoming current minus the outgoing current.
And the outgoing, but it can go also to n minus 1 or not?
Here, Jn plus 1 is the current which goes in here. And, well, no, Jn, the it's just the divergence of the current. It's just a conservation law.
Okay, I'm just making sure it can go. What? Is also
I'm just worrying whether now it should be.
Disassembly.
You're worrying whether it should be n and n minus 1, right?
You can write anything you like for j. I'm just asking if it's also disassembly.
Yes, it's disassembly. So let's write j down. So j has a forward rate, which goes when you take a cluster of size n and you add one more to make n plus 1, and as a backward rate, k minus for dissociation. So are you happy now? Okay. So. K plus is the rate for the forward step, K minus is the rate for the backward step, which naively you keep the same everywhere in this toy model.
Combinatorics is somewhere in K's?
You mean, what? There's no combinatorics. You mean that there are different ways of realizing? Yes, well, that's simply assembled. That's assumed to be taken care of. We're just taking a toy model of a symbol. Yes, there are, of course, multiple configurations. So there's a conservation law, because the sum of all of these concentration has to add up to a fixed value. And you have absorber boundary conditions at n equals n. This is irreversible. It's a mean first passage time problem. And you can solve it. And you get this kind of thing, which Slotnik talked about. You see a probability distribution with just two peaks, monomers and n-mers. So this is capsids, and this is monomers. So you exhaust the system, and you'd expect that the long-time behavior is that everything becomes capsids because the last step is irreversible. That doesn't happen. The monomer solution stops being depleted up until it hits the point where the current is equal to zero. If you go back, you'll see here that when K plus is equal to K minus and C is uniform, then the current is equal to zero. So the assembly stops at this point, which is sort of a quasi-equilibrium. And that obeys the law of mass action. So here is the concentration of viruses. This is the concentration of pentamers in the standard picture with the micellization threshold. you're familiar with. So that's a story for empty capsids. And now you can say, well, can we add an RNA molecule to the Slotnik story? So the rule is then that whenever you put two pentamers together, I have to take a polymer and I glue it along the side edge. So the third pentamer, I have two choices. This little wire can be pulled here and pulled there. I just choose one of the two. And I can continue on. And the rule of the game is you don't allow self-intersections because of electrostatic repulsion. The line must start and end at the same place. And okay, the start is the end.
That's why
here. So the that's simply an experimental fact that this RNA tends to be concentrated at the edges between the plates.
For specific virus.
For this is just a toy model to understand what it is going to do. So you can think of it as electrostatics is pure because the potential is largest along an edge if you take two charged surfaces. Calculate the potential, you find it diverges along the shared edge. And in virus, you really do see the RNA collecting at these edges. So if you continue on the same Slotnik pathway, you find that doesn't violate these rules. Every time you add a pentamer, you can continue on without ever crossing yourself until you've closed off the virus. And now you can ask, well, what kind of pathway do you generate on the surface? So in this case, you really see that the RNA is guiding the assembly. You basically say that the interaction is repulsive unless I put my little thread between them. So we have sticky edges, but the repulsion prevents them from sticking together unless my RNA is present. So my RNA molecule is now directing the assembly.
If I take the total length of RNA, and add all of your edges together, it's like 10%.
We'll see it. I'll show you in a second. Here's what you get. It's called the Hamiltonian cycle. So there's a certain path here which you cover without self-intersection. So it is a fraction of the edges, about 80% of the edges you cover.
I'm talking about the total length of RNA.
I just cut it off wherever I want to. I stop wherever I'm done. So I assembled. It wasn't clear. Okay. So I keep adding pentamers, and I only am allowed to add a pentamer if I can cover at least one of the edges of the pentamer with a wire. So I'm continuing on until I have assembled the full shell.
And then what happens with the tail?
Oh, I cut it off.
Well, you do
it. Okay. That's going to be my designed length of the system. In actuality, it has to go inside, of course. So what you get is a strange-looking path on the surface, which doesn't have icosahedral symmetry. So that's a general. You can show that from how do you call this? Whoops, graph theory. It's impossible to have a single line covering a surface with icosahedral symmetry. So the genome, in general, doesn't have icosahedral symmetry. It can't. You cannot make a genome composed of a linear molecule and rearrange it in any way that it has perfect icosahedral symmetry. This is a simplification. In actuality, you have a double strand and you get a much more complicated graph theoretic problem because you have two strands, one forward and one backward. It's still possible to make a path which is doing that. It's called an Euler path. This is the Noether virus, where you can see double-stranded RNA along the edges. This is an icosahedrally average picture of the RNA. But typically, nearly all configurations you create that way tend to be knotted. So, because they turn over each other, which is presumably not allowed. Okay, so the Slotnik-assisted toy RNA virus assembly seems to be two-state kinetics. And here is the experiment which Slotnik showed last week. If you run, for instance, hepatitis B virus in a gel, and you systematically increase the capsid concentration, so you incubate it and then you run it on the gel, at very low capsid concentration, you just see the RNA molecule. Then as you increase the concentration of proteins, you start to see smears appearing here, but this is not changing. It just becomes dim. And at this point, the intensity shifts to what is close to that of the capsid, although there's a lot of smear there. So Slotnick interprets this as a two-state assembly process. You have, similar to what I just showed you a few pictures before. Oops, sorry. Here, so you get two-state. The mathematics of this model says that the intermediates have a very, very low concentration, and that's what Slotnick feels he has in his experiment. So I will talk a little bit about this controversy between these two groups. The other toy model, I'm nearly done, was developed in Brandeis by Michael Hagen.
The spectrometry of changing is not significant. There's a factor of less than 10.
Why do you say that?
Well, you're going from 15%, 15 to 1 to 120 to 1, so it's less a factor of 10.
And my point that worries that, you because...
The worries me is that you have... The number of steps you have to do in assembly, if each one is a
few. My understanding that this stoichiometry is the one where you where you have the right concentration of the capsids for the proteins. That's my understanding. So this is basically what you would call one-to-one.
Right. The question is whether if you're having two-state model, you're saying this is a justification of it, you have to...
The justification is just that you have two lines here.
Right, but if you're talking about your equations or your picture, to have mostly RNA and no capsids, you have to be in equilibrium case to be mostly one state.
That's correct.
The difference between them is probably 100 kT. And you're changing your system currently on the factor of 10. I don't see how you can beat 100 kT with a factor of 10.
Okay. I'm not sure I entirely follow you, but why don't you explain it?
What is changing by factor 10?
The concentration of capsids.
So what?
And if you're looking at your genetic equations, I'm trying to say that I have two states and which of them is now equilibrium versus the other, you have to have chemical potential has to change by a lot.
It's a cooperative process of whatever number is. It's to the power of conservation to some.
Michael is concerned is that changing concentration is not so important because it goes into the logarithm for the chemical potential.
Right. So you're saying factor of 10 concentration is like...
It's nothing, according...
And the difference between those two states is probably hundreds of kT in energy.
Between the one virus shell, it would say, is nearly 1,000 kT.
Right. So how do you get factor of 10?
I thought it was just a question of you just don't have enough proteins here. You begin to bring in the proteins and it just won't assemble. You just don't have enough proteins to start to make capsids. But you're saying as soon as the concentration goes up, why doesn't it start to appear right from the beginning?
What is it doing?
In some sense, there is.
But you can actually see this tree going practically all the way down. You can still see it here. You might not, but I can see it here. It might be that it really starts already here, and that you just.
I think this is a linear.
Yeah, you must titrate in the proteins, and then eventually you've exhausted it. I don't think it's in. I don't think.
Adam's explanation of this, he's just looking at a particular moment, there's no equilibrium picture.
Yes.
If he waits much longer, you're going to see.
Okay.
Even,
okay, so he would say that if you wait longer, then you'd start to see capsid even over here.
If it was a huge energy.
The assembly, the total assembly energy is of the order of 1,000 kT.
Okay,
no, it's a reasonable point. It's yes. What?
Yeah, I was thinking with Adam.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I confirm that what he means is that eventually every fraction. So what happens in the beginning? Small fractions of viruses are made on every DNA, RNA. Sorry. And then.
So you should see a very vague. You should see so.
Eventually they collide and redistribute, and eventually you get.
Okay.
Some number of good capsids and most of the RNA released.
Most of the RNA is released?
Yes.
Right, if you give insufficient supply. If you have excess RNA, you just have a whole extra RNA is free.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Is it like really, I mean, or.
I'm not an. Okay, yeah.
The CFCs is
Yes, that's right. We're already way biased. We are on the top of the hill.
Yeah, so
we are far from equilibrium.
Okay.
But keep in mind that you get more or less the law of mass action for the assembly, right? For the assembly of the capsid without RNA. Okay, let's look at the only other model we have on which you can do modeling. That's also for a T equals 1 virus, and it is due to Michael Hagen, and he has triangular building blocks and rather than pentagonal ones. The green ones represent the hydrophobic interaction, which glues these pentamers together with a preferred angle, which is the right value to make an icosahedron. On the inside, you have genome binding sites, and the genome is modeled in Hagen's model as a flexible linear polymer. So he sees two forms of assembly, and the key physical parameters are the affinity of this so-called genome with the proteins and the affinity of the proteins with each other. So in the first case, you see you have weak affinity between the genome and the proteins and strong affinity between the proteins. So the proteins begin to form and they just suck in the genome. I'm sorry?
You said it is genome protein versus protein protein.
Yeah.
It's written genome. So.
As you would say, Gewalt. Okay, I'm sorry. It's protein protein affinity.
So
I just blundered.
Typo.
Typos.
You are right. And
this is protein protein. Yes.
It doesn't make sense.
Don't look here. Okay. Right. So you start. What happens is you start to assemble a virus here. You start to put from trimers together, and that creates an attractive surface for the polymer to condense on. The virus continues to build. You have this big tail hanging out, and as the virus continues on, it just sucks in the whole polymer like a vacuum cleaner because of the attractive binding on the inside, and whoop, it's closed. And it looks pretty similar to Slotnick's toy model, or at least my interpretation of the Slotnick toy model, where the assembly requires just a little extra push, which comes from the protein, just it neutralizes the electrostatic repulsion a little bit. So this seems to lead to a similar conclusion. And the kinetics of this is described by a nice paper, Boris and Tai Ho, where you argue that, well, the kinetics works like this. You have this sort of fluctuating polymer on the outside. It's like an antenna. So the key here is diffusion. So this should work at very low concentrations of the proteins. They come in, they're hooked, and then like fly casting, and they slide down and are being assembled. So this looks reasonably consistent, I think, with the model of Sklovsky. But if he turns on the protein genome interaction, an entirely different assembly scenario happens. But then follows is that because the binding between the proteins is weak, you get a kind of condensate. You get your polymer here is now covered with these proteins, and it's basically taking a polymer in good solvent and turning it into a polymer in bad solvent, because they have sort of attractive edges here, and as time goes on, this thing begins to condense, forms more and more edges, some closed, some open, and sort of this coil becomes a globule, still disordered, and then it snaps closed and it gets folded. It looks very similar to protein folding, where this would be sort of like a molten globule, and this is the finely folded state. So effectively, the protein-protein, the weaker protein-protein interaction makes this like a polymer in poor solvent. And one thing which is surprising is that during this process, often you see that proteins are being shed. They're being pushed away. You have too many proteins, which is a point we talked about already earlier. If this polymer is completely extended, then every site becomes attractive. So the whole polymer wants to be covered with proteins. But at the end of the day, only the polymers which are in contact with the outer surface here benefit. So my last slide is this controversy about interpretation of data. These are the UCLA data by Nobler and Gelbart on cesium-V. So the experiments by Adam were on hepatitis B virus. So unfortunately, here the concentration runs from right to left. So what has happened here is that you take cesium phi proteins, you put it in contact with RNA1 molecules, genome molecules, actually from a different virus, BMV, and you incubate it at high pH, and then you reduce the pH to trigger assembly because you get stronger protein-protein coupling. And when you walk from the right to the left, the capsid protein concentration increases. So we start, so these are different, what they call trajectories in the gel band. So forget about these two. Here, the capsid concentration is zero, so this is just RNA1. It's a little bit broad, so evidently it can have glassy structures. By the way, in a gel electrophoresis, if you see a sharp line, that means that it is a well-equilibrated system. If you have a distribution of line, it indicates that the system is not equilibrating on the time scale of the experiment. As you increase the protein concentration, you see that this is spreading out, and you don't see yet much of the virus. The spreading out suggests that it forms a kind of glassy aggregate, perhaps with the proteins producing more tertiary contacts, explaining why it can go faster, and other ones seem to go slower. Then over here, you start to see some of the capsid appearing.
You're saying that they're both larger and smaller than this?
Yep, exactly. So this is the initial RNA one, and you see both larger and smaller ones. It's suggesting a whole range of structures. More compact, which can go faster, and other ones which seem to go slower. The slower ones eventually accumulate. These are probably the ones which have most of the proteins which cause them to change the sign of the charge. Eventually, you get pure cesium V virus. Now, they find what they call the magic ratio. This is the ratio where all RNA is finally hoovered up by proteins. And your naive expectation might be, this must be the stoichiometric ratio of the virus, where you have the right amount of protein versus RNA. Well, that's not the case. They claim that this is nearly twice as large, and this magic ratio is the one where you neutralize the system, where the RNA molecules, the negative charge of the RNA molecules, is compensated by the positive charges coming out of the proteins. The proteins are dipolar, and the positive charges are carried here on tails, which are sticking to the virus interior, and it's being neutralized here. Being neutralized there causes the system to compactify and thereby speed up the assembly. So this is this magic ratio, I think 1 to 7 or something like that.
6 to 1.
So it corresponds
to weight.
300 proteins per RNA molecule, and actual cesium-V is only 118 proteins per RNA molecule. If that's true, that means that you have to shed nearly half of all your proteins during the assembly, and I believe that that's, again, because it's a surface-to-volume problem. The pre-condensate has proteins in contact with every bit of the genome, and in the virus, it's only the surface, so there's a trivial surface-to-volume argument which shows you that, in general, you have to get that. This is their final phase diagram. This is the polymer length. So this is Hagen and Elrod. And this is the affinity between the capsomer and the polymer. So this is the green bit here is successful assembly. This is on the pathway to assembly. So this is all good. The brown bit is mixed phase. This is malformed. And this is the real problem. Here you get a capsid with a tail outside, which frequently is covered with proteins. So as you increase the length of your genome, you typically end up with some stuff sticking outside. There's no particular reason for it. Once you have pacified all of the bonds on the inside, once you have covered the charge, there's no reason for the rest of the protein to go inside, which is the big problem.
Should we think of that still as an equilibrium phase diagram or as a kinetic threat phase diagram or something?
This is not an equilibrium phase diagram. This is on pathway, for example, and they call which is partial assembly. So this is at one instant in time. This is not the final state. All the blue ones will be converted into green. They just take more time because apparently the kinetics is slower for smaller polymers. No, I don't want to talk about that. So this is basically the end of the discussion, and If you want, I can talk about other questions if you, but this is where people in terms of viral assembly are discussing a great deal, trying to come up with simple models to explain how you can encapsulate so much RNA. It seems very likely that you need very careful fine-tuning. My suggestion is that the RNA is self-attracting and that the condensation of the RNA assists the assembly.
I mean, can RNA form this kind of Casper bonds itself?
RNA? No. No. But RNA can condense. It can collapse into itself.
Well,
RNA
it
is not...
It does have these oxygens which can be mediated.
It's hydrogen bonding. I don't know if they're pH sensitive. I'm not a chemist. I do not. I know that that RNA can collapse. I do not know if it's pH sensitive.
But in this model here, they just have the...
They don't have that. Self-repelling.
Yeah, there is no charges, actually.
No, no charges. They just model the charges.
It's still a very primitive model.
Absolutely. It's the best we have, though.
This is just short-range interactions. Charges are still not done, so it should be good.
If you want, I can talk about the question which Michael raised about assembling bigger viruses and defects, but that's a completely different.
Can you summarize the open questions?
The open questions here.
Okay.
So the open questions are, first, what is the structure of the RNA molecule inside the virus? Does it have its secondary structure? Does it follow something like a Hamiltonian path? Very difficult to visualize because when you do X-ray, you do icosahedral averaging. So since the RNA structure cannot have, for fundamental reason, icosahedral symmetry, it's difficult for us to reconstruct it exactly.
But is there a reason to assume that it doesn't rearrange once it forms? But you were describing its path as the way to form it, assuming that once its form is frozen.
For PMV, you know that you have to destroy the secondary structure. For spherical virus, I don't see how the secondary structure would get destroyed. I would say it just will get compactified.
So that's not
possible. Except that there's experimental evidence that the secondary structure is destroyed also for T equals 3 virus. A man called Alexander McPherson.
Destroyed by
is the packaging destroys the secondary structure. He found that when the RNA comes out, it tends to be linear with a lot of little hairpins.
For the one-dimensional kinetic model of association, I don't understand why, if the final state is infinitely absorbing, why you still keep intermittent?
Okay. Yeah. What happens is that you get this current, right, which Ronnie asked about, K plus and a K minus term. As you begin to deplete the monomer concentration, that current at some point goes to zero when K plus C1 is K minus. At that point, the current is on average zero. You only have some sort of diffusive current, which is very, very slow. So the rapid... But it's logarithmic. It turns out that this second stage is extremely slow. So you have a very slow logarithmic growth eventually towards completion, and you end up in this pseudo-law of mass action.
So the final stage...
The final stage, it's the age of the universe, because it requires essentially activation of an energy barrier. An energy barrier effective.
Is that true, or is just diffusion of the last...
Well, you get this one-dimensional equation, conformational space, becomes a diffusion equation if you reach that point where K plus C1 is K minus.
And then it's just a diffusion time. I mean, it's, it goes with some power of the length of the process.
That's right, but okay.
It's not exponentially large, it's just power law large.
It turns out to be, well, it's logarithmic. That's what you find. The second thing to keep in mind, which wasn't in this model, is that you actually have a line energy. So you do generate a barrier. If you make, you can enlarge that model to include the line tension of the uncovered cap of the shell, and then you start from a state where you go linearly down, and as you deplete the available monomers, this thing goes shallower and shallower, and then turns into a barrier.
I was also not very clear on the final conclusion of these Is that a CMC or not? You say
that's a pseudo CMC.
The graphs that Adam showed suggested that it was a isolation-like process.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
And you said that's only kinetics, is not really.
It's there. You see, you get a micellization transition, where rather quickly you see the production of a lot of capsids. Even if you're below the micellization transition, if you wait very, very, very long, eventually you would exhaust the system.
In your units, I think that CMC is 10 to the minus 50 or something. If you have one other thing.
Sorry?
The CMC is very, very low. It's vanishingly small, no?
For viruses, micromolar.
100 KT.
No, not per protein. What counts is per protein?
Yes, that's right. It's the binding energy per protein, which is just 4 or 5 KT.
Yeah, okay, so it's still smaller than.
It's small, but it's very clearly measurable. Yeah. So you clearly measure CMC. If you increase the concentration, you see you reach a fairly sharp threshold points where capsid assembly starts and then saturates at higher concentration.
That's below all the experiments. It's below.
No. You can see it in experiment.
No, not the gels that you showed.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's right. Sure. Those well, they start from zero and presumably up until you reach this micellization point, nothing happens. You just see RNA 1. The gels don't show the monomers, I should have mentioned. They only show the RNA and the aggregates. They don't show the monomers.
So that was one question. What other
questions? So the key open question
That was one.
The second question is the one is this dispute between Slotnick and the UCLA group. If you believe in this condensation picture, then you are left with of the order of 100 proteins on the genome which have to be expelled to assemble the system. How do you expel these proteins? So if indeed this pre-condensate picture is right, if you start with a polymer which is covered with proteins, so that every part of the polymer is in contact with the protein, how do you go to the virus where only a fraction of the polymer is in contact with the protein? Does that make sense?
Not immediately. I'm trying to how do you know when you have protein polymer aggregate, how do you know you have excess in the beginning?
Charge balance.
No,
let's go look at this picture again. Okay. So say ask your question again. What is it?
My question is, if I start with the polymer, with the open polymer capsid complex,
the open
open before it closes.
But okay, yeah.
Well, how do I know the geometry?
How do I know the stoichiometry
of the complex? It doesn't have to be charged.
We start according to the UCLA experiments. Optimal assembly is from a charge neutral state, where you have exactly the right amount of proteins to compensate the charge. Whether these proteins are in contact with the genome, you don't know. You only know you get optimally efficient assembly at the charge ratio where you get charge neutralization. Whether they actually are in contact, you don't know for sure. But if they are in contact with each other, then there is a problem because you have to get rid of all of these contacts, which are presumably favorable. So during the assembly, you have to go for some sort of barrier to go from here to about there. And maybe there's a Brownian ratchet model that's which sort of pushes off successively protein after protein.
But you have to have a driving force, so this means some kind of attraction between.
Yeah. So what if this picture is correct, what is the motor which pulls off all of these proteins to go from here to there? So that's an unsolved problem.
And by the way, what about ATP?
There's no ATP.
There is no ATP.
No ATP. All passive.
So whose picture is this?
This is coming from the Noble-Gelbart group.
Okay. And the other picture is
from some Slotnick. Slotnick claims it's all nonsense. At least he does hepatitis B virus and simply got it. But you remember that his pictures are kind of blurry. It's hard to interpret. He claims there is nothing special at the charge neutralization point.
Oh yeah, but I understand. Isn't the driving force is really the capsid, the bonds in the capsid? So,
yeah.
So what's the question about the driving force? Of course, we have to overcome an electrostatic barrier
No. Here. Suppose I start running from a state where I have a polymer, and the polymer condenses on its surface proteins, which neutralize its charge. You're happy with that. Okay, now I start to assemble the capsid because of the favorable context. The capsid grows, and you complete it, and you end up with this state, with this thing sticking out covered with proteins. How do you get this in there? It's a surface-to-volume problem.
But you don't have a problem of getting the capsid, right?
You don't have the problem to get the capsid, but there is no tail. They can check. There is no tail. If they send in RNAs, there is no tail.
But this argument is about kinetics, in some sense, or about intermediate states, because in the end, both of you would agree that there is charge imbalance, and somehow has to be compensated.
Yes. No, so what is the organization of the charge on proteins?
In the in this state?
I'm actually thinking at the end.
At the end, only a fraction of the proteins are in contact with the RNA.
I know. And what's happened to the charge on the
Small ions like magnesium.
So that inside of that capsid, there's plenty of magnesium.
That's right. So you have to exchange these polyvalent ions, which have typically 10 charges, with magnesium, which have just 2. Why would it want to do that?
I mean, wasn't magnesium observed inside?
You have always magnesium. That they have these special buffers for it. It's called assembly buffer, and has always magnesium.
No, but was it observed inside?
Observed.
Inside.
Seen.
I mean, by
seen?
Experimentally, yeah.
You don't see magnesium on the inside. It has to be there because of charge neutralization.
Sodium,
but magnesium is more favorable because you have less counter.
You can form a capsid without. So Roman, I'm super confused.
Yeah.
By the time, in the final state as it really is, which has all the RNA inside,
yeah.
Does the RNA neutralize charges on the inner surface of proteins?
More than that, it overcompensates. It overcompensates. Yeah.
2-to-1, roughly.
Of the
charge of RNA to charge of tails of proteins.
Yeah.
2-to-1. And why? This is the question.
Yeah.
So that's the second big question.
Second big question. They very well may be coupled.
Does it work with volume?
Sorry?
Does it work with volume?
I think things are not quite as good if you don't have divalent ions. But you have to ask a chemist. I think you need... Do you know anything about it, Julia? I think you need a bit of magnesium in these assembly buffers. But because they want to be able to compare experiments, they tend to always use the same buffer. So you can't have disagreements between groups about assembly process. So there's a certain standard assembly buffer.
What about that? I mean, the RNA outside is not happy with the outer surface, right, in general?
Typically, no. The outer surface has opposite charge.
Yeah, so maybe it's a little effect. He wants to get inside in order to really
jump. It's in salt. No.
But he's saying it's actually got a load of not drawn. Mm-hmm. Floating
yeah,
protein.
There are proteins in here,
okay.
which are neutralizing it. Yeah.
In this picture, I have a problem understanding why the capsid works as a tool. The interaction on each edge of this capsid is so much better with nucleic acid than with the neighbor. It shouldn't close at all, right?
Why not? So you have these 3 blue dots. Remember these? What is it? 9 blue dots on the inside. They're all covered now. In this state. The red is long enough to cover all of the blue dots, so they're happy.
Robin, yeah. I have a question about the toy models.
Yeah.
Why people, as far as they can tell, all these toy models imply that things go right away all the time.
Yeah.
For instance, when you assemble these pentamers together, I can easily imagine that the extra pentamer came in, and then further growth is impossible because you have to keep
big problem number 3, not yet mentioned. It's already hard enough without misfolding. We can talk about if you'd like. I'll tell you what I know about it, but that's a separate problem. T=1 has no misfolding steps. If you make the virus a bit bigger with pentamers and hexamers, and it becomes even harder. But it seems to me that if you want to understand the problem of RNA-assisted assembly, you first should understand the T=1. the other ones are only going to become more complex.
And the ionic strength is high.
0.1 molar.
Which is much, so the value is much smaller.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, there is, forget about that.
This neutralization argument only says that you put in your preparation to start with the right amount of stuff. It doesn't say that the intermediates have an RNA with such and such amount.
That's
of,
right. You only have to. Yeah, this is the concentration ratio where they could neutralize each other if they were on top of each other.
The only thing you know is that the amount you put
in. That's right. You only know the stoichiometric ratio, so you do not know if they are in contact.
Maybe
you'd have to do
a fraction of them are in contact.
That's right. So that's what Bill Galward believes. He doesn't believe there's real neutralization. What is only happening is that a fraction, one out of two, of the proteins isn't actually in contact, so there's no problem.
It's not in the simulations, right?
What?
It's not in the simulations of Fagan.
No, certainly not. No, no. Once a protein sits there, it just sits there. It's 10 kT. That doesn't go up.
So.
The problem is your intermediate state. I mean, this kind of state where the RNA is covered by protein. I mean, in principle, one could perhaps do some kind of cryo freezing and then look at the electron microscopy just to prove that it's there. People try that.
No, they haven't, because it's with cryo EM. I am not an experimentalist, introduces a lot of artifacts.
I know, but
and particular fragile molecule or fragile structures. If you have a robust structure, you can use cryo-EM. If it's very fragile, you don't want to do that. What they have done is tested RNA's activity at different steps, and they do find that they're
protected.
No, not the initial ones are not quite protected yet. So you start to form assemblies which don't seem to be fully protected, which seem to be relatively open.
Actually, they actually see no RNA, but just RNA without a self-assembly of food.
Yeah?
Just RNA, they can see very well by cryo,
yeah. Yeah, in fact, I showed you a picture earlier on. This is branched picture.
Yeah, so I don't see the... What's your answer now? Why you cannot do the assembly?
It's impressionistic. You cannot make any real conclusions. Yeah. It goes onto a surface. You have to evaporate. What?
Not so. Less.
I would expect RNA to be more robust than these delicate assemblies before they have really come together.
There is a theory explaining to the run from.
Yeah, Boris wants to make an extended call.
Okay, go ahead.
So,
do you want me to put up the screen or?
Yeah,
it's going to be on the blackboard because there is.
I have a switch. Oh, I don't have anything to
do. I learned this is magic.
I think Roden. Only in the end, emphasize a ratio of 2-to-1 of charges. That's a dramatic fact. Indeed, that RNA typically has charge which is twice larger than charge of all tails of all proteins. So let me tell you about tails a little bit. Each tail can be longer, can be 30 or 40 amino acids. And charge of the tail is typically 10, hepatitis B has 15, and so tail is very important. I was trying, you know, several years ago, I published a paper where I derived this 2-to-1, but derived is a strong word, in the sense that I don't know what nature optimized. So what shall I optimize when I do this, so I was optimizing energy, stability of virus, and whether it's true or not for nature, we have no idea.
Well, maybe you should take the microphone.
Whether this is true for nature, I don't know. Because sometimes people emphasize instability of virus when it comes to cell, it's disassembled. So, you know, both stability and instability have merit. But I was emphasizing stability, and I solved the following problem. I took the shell with 180 tails, essentially. And I imagine that that RNA is single-stranded, and we saw lots of single-stranded RNA here. And actually, to defend myself, to add to my defense, that it can be like single-stranded. There is a McPherson model indeed, where he argues that there is a native model of RNA with secondary structure. But it's almost degenerate with another model of RNA prepared for virus. And his model is not a polymer, not linear polymer, but it's linear thing, but with short hairpins. But it's just linear system. And so these hairpins are made by nature, according to McPherson, so that they can make symmetric picture, because with native RNA you cannot make anything symmetric, exactly symmetric.
In fact, in his Hamiltonian cycle, the side chains we use to cover the remaining uncovered edges by the main chain.
Right. So he argues that the degeneracy of secondary structure says that there is close such structure for RNA of viruses, and also he argues that when he extracts this RNA from virus, destroying virus, he sees this. I cannot comment on that. So this is just to let me proceed with one-dimensional polymer, and my picture was something like this. Okay, I need another. That RNA goes in and does the following trick, going all over the tails, and binding all proteins like this. So problem I solved is the following problem. I assume that there is a excess of RNA here, and this this object can pull in RNA, and I was trying, and I proved that there is a maximum length it wants to prove to minimize energy. Optimizing this, I was assuming different arrangement of one tail and an RNA, where the tail goes around RNA or vice versa. This is tail and RNA goes like this. And optimizing all possibilities of this microscopic picture, I came to conclusion that picture actually looks like this. So total length of RNA is equal to total length of tails. And this is optimal from point of view of electrostatics.
What about the small bits that are not in contact? Even in your drawing?
Yeah. So okay, this is accuracy.
So it's much denser.
Remember that tails are very long.
You're talking about length. So
let me do it in real scale. Scale is not good. So tails, blue, they go to the center roughly.
They are very dense?
They're very long.
But charge density on the tails and on the RNA is similar?
This is next.
That's factor of two.
That's next. That's factor of two. I will talk about this. But
you claim that if I change the model, the tails will be fraction, the charge will be much
so
higher.
Sorry. For linear density of RNA and linear density of charge on the tail differs twice. So linear density on DNA of charge is twice larger than for tails. And for this case, optimization says that if I am sucking in the RNA, I should bring twice more of charge of RNA from electrostatic energy. So what I was doing with electrostatic energy, I was considering every such complex of this as a linear object with some charge density, linear charge density, screened by screening radius of salt, and this is logarithmic energy, you know, linear object with screening, and then I just optimize this energy. And I was thinking that doing this, and it's very important, I was thinking that this distance between two tails is smaller than screen radius. So they interact individually. That's important thing. And this seems to be right because this distance is like 40 angstroms and this screen radius is 10 angstroms. Okay, so this is the problem I solved. What has it to do to evolution or to direction or, you know, what nature, I don't know.
So my question is, if I change a parameter which is charge density of blue tails.
Yes.
Is your answer changes proportionally?
Yes. My answer, no. Then optimization, not equal length, but optimization leads to one of these pictures.
So it's not the charge density that's important, but the ratio of charges. That's what I was
saying. No. Ratio of charge densities.
Ratio of charge density, not.
Ratio of charge densities led to simple parallel structure. And as a result, to twice larger charge of RNA.
Okay.
Now, I was thinking about very small density of proteins and everything.
Because in the simulation we showed, we had the same, ratio was 2:1, but the charge density ratio was 1. Remember that?
Which simulation?
Block copolymer simulation that we were working on. You start with the block copolymer, you should change the ratio of charges and see at what point, if it's symmetric, two symmetric blocks, plus and minus, block copolymer, then it forms a globular. Now you start changing the length of one of the two and see at what point the tail gets spit out.
That's
out
different.
Gets spit out at ratio 2:1. Remember?
Yeah, that's different. That's different story. I know okay. The story, but it's a different story. So discussion today and reference to Michael Hagen considered also the case where system is very dense. So what happens if system dense? So every protein is a piece of triangle or something with a tail. So and if system is dense, that RNA, which is balanced, so what I was doing theoretically, was balancing this length, how much should go in, how much should stay, thinking that it's very long. And optimum was, as I said, 1:1 with length and 2:1 with charge. But at the moment...
Optimization, boy, in your optimization, you did not have any proteins that are sticking outside. The sink outside was just...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's my sentence. I said, in optimization, I thought it's naked. And this is the reason why it want to go inside physically. Because here it's naked and charge per unit length, charge per unit length is large, and energy per unit length related, just Coulomb energy is enormous. And so it wants to hide and now make polymers which are more neutral, not totally neutral. This complex is not totally neutral because this is 2:1, but it's smaller.
It's usual overcharging argument, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so it goes in under desire because of desire to hide this tail. Well, it goes in, makes it 2:1 charge. The rest nature is not using, so nature is using 2:1, so fine. But now, if density of proteins is large, they're sitting all over. I remind you that this is positive tail. Interaction between this tail and the RNA is typically 10-15 kT, so it's a huge energy, and so they cover by large concentration this thing, and if one optimize, and this is neutral, as you mentioned. So now, when I'm trying to hide this tail in of RNA, it doesn't like it much. It's comfortable here, the tail is comfortable outside, because it's neutralized outside. And so one can think that amount of RNA which will enter here will also lead to neutrality. So there is this reason for overcharging kind of disappeared.
You gain the translational entropy of proteins if you release them.
It's just 1 kT of
you're
losing 10 kT of
So
why are you losing? When it goes in, it still can bind.
Not as well, because it's already bound.
No, but that calculation, assume that it was empty. So going in was beneficial.
Now it's much less beneficial.
But when you go in terms of electrostatics, don't you have the same balance that inside?
This happens now only, now. When this is covered. When this is covered, yes. And that's why there is no reason to overcharge.
Can I ask a dumb question? I think everything is entropy because, I mean, everything comes with counter ions. So you can balance the RNA charge with counter ions. And the only reason you have the binding of the proteins to the RNA is counter ions.
Entropy is everywhere, I agree.
So it's entropy. So why are you
saying wait. Entropy is everywhere, but there is a very, say, you have the bihical screening. So is it electrostatics or entropy? This is both, entropy included, but it is known that there is a very economical way to describe energy. You just forget word entropy, and you operate with Coulomb interaction with screening. And this is exact thing, it's proven, and so you don't need to raise this question every time. There is such economical way not to think about it.
I think that if you use the bihical, you can just as well think about screen Coulomb interaction and not worry about.
Yeah, that's
the question
studied
about
many times in books.
The property here is very interesting. The question whether the bihical is like giving us a zeroth order right theory to use it for RNA and DNA is, I don't think it's a proven.
Well, it obviously
is. Well, for single stranded RNA or DNA, the bihical approach is okay. I'm not emphasizing the bihical. I'm saying that.
Because here, if you've got condensation of chains of opposite charge, you can't really say that's the bihical problem.
Yeah.
No, it is the bihical problem. You can write energy of two parallel opposite charge chains if resulting linear charge density is smaller than Manning's. It is smaller than Manning even for single RNA. Together with tail, it's even smaller.
Yeah,
and if there is no condensation.
If I think of the RNA, half of its counter ions are polymers. Only half of them are magnesium. Half of the counter ions of the RNA are the polymers of those
polymers. Okay, let me start. Let me answer this question. I go back to Manning condensation. Manning story says that if you have linear density of polymer, which is T over E or smaller, you can use the bihical screening. A linear density of RNA, of single-stranded RNA, is exactly T over E. And so for single,
that's the
coil. Yeah. Who is coil?
Right?
Single-stranded RNA.
Well, why?
Huh?
RNA is a coil. It's not a coil.
Manning condensation.
Doesn't matter. Locally.
Manning condensation describes a condensation of small valence one or valence two counter ions.
Right. Valence one. I am talking valence one. Sorry.
Co-conservation. Yeah, not the condensation of one polymer onto another polymer.
Yeah, let me continue. I didn't finish my sentence. So we know that for linear charge, if charge is smaller than T over E, we can use the bihical theory. We cannot use it if, as for double helix DNA, charge is 4 T over E.
Or for magnesium.
Okay, right. So I'm talking single ions. Okay, here, two guys are running together, and this charge, as a result, linear density of charge, becomes twice smaller, as we discussed. So now we have half T over E. Okay, will it do for magnesium? That's a delicate question. Does it do for single ions? Of course. So I wouldn't.
There have been many simulations by Mukul Kumar, which are quoted a lot in the literature, and he has a different proportionality than you. And what is the difference?
They first derive different proportionality from experiment, which is strange, because we operate with the same bank of data, and so somehow there is a discrepancy in Darwin-like work when we operated with bank of data. And in his work, there is no calculation of charge inversion. No, he doesn't try to calculate anything from theory. He just emphasizes that there are tails. There is this picture, and this picture he has this picture too,
And actually, he was first to advocate this picture. I was at the talk of his student. But they never, ever derived analytically anything.
How do you explain this
data? Which data?
That's
what we're talking about.
This is tautological and the
SLA optimal thing. Wait. I said when it is covered by DNA, by proteins. Watch. My theory doesn't work. My theory works for empty tail, which you have for low density. For high density, my theory doesn't work.
Sure. You start with your tail and you get 2-to-1 right away.
If it is empty.
No,
you don't understand me. This is theory about a single capsid. I am operating with single capsid and single long RNA. And I am asking how much of RNA capsid wants to pull on itself.
Michael is asking how does the RNA.
I didn't reach this stage, Mark.
Michael,
I am talking about. I will come to that. Robin, sorry.
I think Mike is asking, how does the RNA know when it's interacting with the protein, whether the protein will be inside or the outside? What difference does it make?
The same to the inside the tails.
Wait. This, I said, I didn't solve the whole problem. I solved only this problem. I have one capsid, and I have a long RNA given to me. And my question is, how much of this long RNA entered in? You asking, how did you solve the whole global problem? With concentration, blah, blah, blah. I didn't. I solved this problem, which is shown on the blackboard. Now, I'm telling you that this solution for large density cannot be perfect, cannot be good. Because at large density, this tail is covered. Now I'm switching to solution discussion. Previously, I was discussing this simple object. Now I'm switching to solution discussion. So if solution has small concentration, yes, this is what's happening. This is empty, and this is a. And if nature cares about stability of viruses, I don't know. But if it cares, this is related to observation. Okay? But if I think about high density solution, then I should consider the tail is covered too. And then roughly speaking, I am coming to neutrality of this object. And neutrality of this tail, and maybe it has some relationship with Chuck Knobler's experiment. But the fact is that they discuss where they assemble, and maybe when they assemble, neutrality makes sense. But the fact is, when they finished assembly, they have 2-to-1 ratio.
So
I don't know how to resolve this. I was trying to give up part of my statement, and I don't know how to resolve it.
So if I have a question, maybe
yeah, sure.
It might help or not.
Yes.
How these proteins that cover the tail, which is outside, can they really neutralize everything? Because they are large, right? It's not
here they assembled.
Outside
they can of course.
RNA
they can.
RNA is quite flexible. And
yeah, they can.
Have long tails. So
they can. No, the problem is them.
Maybe.
Let me answer his question.
Just throwing away to the earth. Okay.
Yeah. Let me answer your question.
If it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And you don't, then you have some ions also there, and if you enter the tail, these ions can go to the solution and you get entropy. If it's, maybe it's only, no. If you take this that you need to get
or maybe you form little loops, which maybe from every protein, a little loop exactly in a 2-to-1 ratio or something like that.
But this you can see in simulation if you add the counter ions.
Yeah. Let me answer his question, please, Danny. So they have quite big bodies. These proteins, so bodies don't help to. Okay, sorry, bodies should be blue. And if bodies staying out like this, let me do it. So this is the body, this is the body, and this is the tail. So in this way, these tails can come from both sides, and all together neutralized RNA. So,
but the charge densities are still different, so they need to be in conformation.
Let me repeat. They can come from both sides. See? Now there are two tails per RNA.
Why that are not loops such that the amount?
Here it's not difficult to do. This is specific organization. Here you can do as much as you want. So when Robin showed you modeling original state of molten globula, so maybe this is molten globula, and we are assembling from molten globula. Question is now, how do I prove that when I assemble from molten globula, neutral, I come to this object, which is not neutral in the sense of big guys, and is 2 to 1, my method is lost. So what I calculated, I told you, but now I'm not allowed to calculate this. So how do I get 2 to 1? So please help.
The bodies of these proteins are neutral?
Bodies are dipole-like. They have plus and minus.
I have a suggestion. We are discussing this for 1 hour, 30 minutes. There is coffee break and cookies.
Yeah,
I suggest to see what's wrong with Boris.
No.